fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, David Johnson, baby! A hop, a skip, a jump.
He is a freak, there's no doubt.
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
And we start with a question, a trivia question for one Darren Urban and Kyle Odegaard. Gentlemen, are you ready?
Sure.
Which one of these really happened? The NFL Network debating whether the Cardinals should trade Patrick Peterson to the Packers or the Arizona Cardinals trading for Adrian Peterson. It's a trick question. They both happened. Both went down within a span of a few hours of each other. The Cardinals have AP, or is it AD? Right off the top, as long as we're naming names, yours truly, Paulie Pencilneck. Are we going with AP or AD? As in all day or Adrian Peterson? These are the critical questions we must have an answer to.
I'm going to sound really bad here right now, Paul, but I'm going to say, who gives up?
Oh, it is a podcast, I think. We actually don't need to bleep ourselves, no, but Darren did so. It's a family podcast.
I actually had somebody tweet out, could you make sure people know his nickname is AD? Okay. You could still call him AP, especially on Twitter, yeah, when you're supposed to be, yeah, character conscious. Yeah.
It's good. No, I like that, Darren. Spoken like a man coming off a 34-7 road loss at the Eagles. Yeah. There are far more important things to wonder about. Kyle, where does your mind go here as the Cardinals go to 2-3 after week 5?
Yeah, I think this Adrian Peterson trade is interesting now because obviously people were pretty down on this team. Struggle the first 5 games of the year. You can't run the ball. Your defense gave up a bunch last game, which was the big surprise that they couldn't do anything against the Eagles. So it gives a little bit of optimism. I don't know at this point in his career how much Adrian Peterson's going to help you, but it does leave some intrigue to see. Maybe the run game can get better, which means the play action can work better, which means the pass will be better, and this offense needs to score more points, clearly, and maybe this is a little bit of a spark for them.
If you're looking for the Cardinals' run game in the stat page in the NFL, just look at the very bottom, whether it's yards per game, less than 52, whether it's yards per carry, 2.6. And so you might imagine that a guy like Bruce Arians might just welcome Adrian Peterson.
Very excited about having AP join us. Steve and I had been talking for a couple weeks about, the running back position. And Chris Johnson's a great guy. I hate that it came down this way for him. But we had to do something to help our football team.
Bruce just said AP, so
there you
I'm
go.
I'm just saying.
A guy who goes by BA, he should know. We're going to go with AP then.
Those are his initials.
Sure. I'm with you on that one.
And hopefully he still has some day left in him.
And honestly, we need to use the initials because there are two Pro Bowl Petersons on this roster now.
Yeah, that's
now.
True.
So, for all of us here when we're talking about this on multiple platforms, we've got to have this figured out. I want to figure this much out. Everyone says that Adrian Peterson was a poor fit in New Orleans based on what they like to do, especially running out of the shotgun, and that's not his forte. He's more accustomed to running behind a fullback, which, okay.
That
which,
doesn't really help which, him, though, does
which,
it?
Which Darren sets up the question. The next question for Bruce Arians, is this a good fit?
He's run the football all his life. Very similar in Minnesota to what we do and is a good fit. Felt like it was a good move for our team at this point in time. So we made the move, and we're really excited to have him.
All right. Minnesota was a good fit and similar to the Cardinals. Now, nobody expects Bruce Arians to change his offense, right? Show of hands, everybody in agreement on that one. He's not changing the offense, but a guy who's known as a downhill runner, that has a place in the Cardinals offense, right?
Yeah, and they do a lot of the stuff where they have 2 tight ends or 3 tight ends and really kind of do that smash mouth thing, which he will probably do. And I think he fits fine in this offense. I don't think you're going to have to do a lot of different things because the way he does it, I think, will work with what their schemes are. It's just a question of at 32 years old, after a couple of pretty big injuries the last few years, does he have anything left in the tank where he can go back to what he was two or 3 years ago when he was still a really good running back? But the cliff is a steep drop for some of these running backs. And we saw it with Chris Johnson, where 2 years ago he was one of the better running backs in the league for the Cardinals. And this year it was just clear, like, The offensive line wasn't very good, but when Chris Johnson had the ball, he didn't have that burst anymore, and that's the question now is, can Adrian Peterson, when there's those little cracks of daylight, can he make more out of it than Chris Johnson could? Because Chris, as great as of a guy as he is, you could tell it just wasn't there anymore.
Because, Darren, if memory serves, your initial reaction was, is this really an upgrade over Chris Johnson? Because if you go back to 2015, Chris Johnson was among the league leaders in rushing midway through before he got injured. Adrian Peterson was the league's leading rusher by the end of the year, just under 1,500 yards.
Yeah, and that's the last time Adrian Peterson had a lot of production, because last year he was injured almost all year, and then we all know that the Saints thing didn't work out. I've had people, ever since Adrian Peterson I think it was a Monday night game whenever the Saints played and he did the stare down thing with Sean Payton, and it was clear that he was not going to get much playing time in New Orleans, which is why he was getting irritated. I've had people saying, well, wouldn't the Cardinals trade for Adrian Peterson? Why wouldn't they trade? And the whole time, I'll be honest, I didn't think that would happen. And I didn't think it would happen because while they're obviously different body types, I just felt like what Adrian Peterson brought to the table was so similar to what Chris Johnson was bringing you, including the fact that as older backs, I don't know how much really they had left. I wasn't sure what the upgrade was. Now that we're here, and it's a couple weeks later, and it's clear at this point that Chris Johnson was having trouble getting you much, for the amount of money you're spending for the conditional sixth round pick, and that's what it is, a conditional sixth round pick. So even if he doesn't play a lot, it might even be less than that.
You're getting a couple of sixth round picks based on free agency,
and
right?
You could get a compensatory sixth round pick, a couple of them possibly. You're scheduled to, depending on how this all plays out. So you'll get the pick back. I mean, all those things factored in, it makes sense to take a risk and go after Adrian Peterson. If for no other reason, you kind of get everybody excited for a day. Now, I'll be honest, hearing the reaction from the fans, I was expecting to kind of have to temper the fans' excitement for this. And that's really not been the case. Mostly, I mean, there have been some people that are excited, but mostly I'm hearing people that are either Adrian Peterson is done, what's the point? Or B, what's the point? Because without an offensive line, he's not going anywhere, and you didn't help the offensive line, and why aren't you signing an offensive lineman? Why don't you trade for all the offensive linemen and all, blah, blah, blah.
And the way we started this podcast, both could be true, ultimately, right?
Yeah,
I mean, the O-line could undermine any running back, and B, what does he have left? But I think it comes all the way back full circle to that initial question, why not? What do you have to lose? I know I was still in the locker room. You guys are in the press conference room in Philadelphia, and Carson brought up the fact that, look, it's a critical problem with the Bruce Arians offense if there's no threat of the run, because there's no real threat of play action, and then the defense isn't respecting it, right?
Yeah, and I think I'm a little bit more wary than you guys are of giving up a sixth-round pick, even though it's not a high pick. Chances are this guy, whoever it's going to be, isn't going to amount to much. But I just have in the back of my head, if there's a 10% chance that you can get a decent player in that spot, because you've seen they've got J.J. Nelson late, Andre Ellington late, T.J. Logan late. There's a lot of guys in the fifth and sixth round that the Cardinals have found. And even just looking at a T.J. Logan, if he's your kick and punt returner and then he's a third down back for the next 3 years on a rookie contract, that's a great value. So I'm a little bit more hesitant to give up anything unless I really feel like this is a difference maker. And at this point, it definitely remains to be seen, because Adrian Peterson can come here and help improve the running game. But right now there's a lot of holes on this team, and I would just be wary of giving away future assets if it's not enough to push you back into the playoff race.
Now I'm going to argue on that one. And I know what you argue back with me, but I'm going to say what I'm going to say anyways. With 3 6-round picks, assuming that they get those other 2 comp picks, they're not going to use all those 6-round picks. Now, yeah, you could use them to package and move up or whatever, but they're going to, if they end up getting 4 comp picks, they're not going to make all those picks. He'll end up dealing or something. And I think to me, this is your one swing. There's no offensive linemen out there that are probably going to be available that are worth trading for. So you're going to be dealing with whoever you get back injury wise, like a DJ Humphreys or an Alex Boone, and hopefully those guys coming back can make some sort of difference. It won't matter if Jared Valdir continues to struggle, which he kind of took a step back again after playing better against San Francisco. But I still think that this is their, hey guys, this is the move we're going to make. We're going to spend 1 6-round pick. We're going to bring in this guy, and hopefully things can get a little bit better. And now in the locker room, that's our effort. Now let's see what you guys can do, and we'll see where we go through the next couple weeks. I mean, I don't expect any other trades at this point. And I see why you're saying not get rid of the sixth-round pick, but I think it's just too early for them considering the season over. And that's what you'd essentially being if you don't do anything.
That's what I was going to say is it depends on your optimism for the rest of the season, where I'm looking at it from a point differential standpoint. You're minus 44. Your two wins are in overtime against poor teams, where if you don't get a great play against San Fran late or you lose that game to the Colts, you're 1-4 and you probably don't make this trade. So I understand doing it because you're trying to get back into the playoff hunt, but I just worry that, you know, if things keep going this way, then you gave away a sixth-round pick for something that isn't going to help you enough to get you back into the playoffs.
But a win, you're 3-3, and then you got a game against the division leader. So it's right there, right, at midseason for a shot at maybe a spot atop the division, believe it or not, despite the struggles to begin the season. At least I'm presuming that's the way the GM is looking at it.
Yeah.
When he puts out a statement and he says, and I quote, "Our need for a spark in our running game right now is also obvious, and we're excited to give him the chance to provide that," end quote. We know B.A. is on board. The question is, will it indeed change his offense?
No, hopefully we've got some better blockers up there, and that'll help a little bit. But we'll tailor it like we always do to the back, and he and I will visit and talk about what we do and what he likes.
Now, that was interesting in there. Hopefully we have some better blockers up there. Yeah. Is he portending the return, foreshadowing the return of perhaps D.J. Humphreys and Alex Boone, as soon as this week, the home game and only home game in a 5-week span against Tampa?
Well,
that would go a long way.
I would assume that, well, I shouldn't say assume, but I would think that maybe one of them is close. If you keep talking about maybe and maybe, you know, yeah, I do think that that's where they're expecting. And again, your problem right now is if they're not ready, you are going to have the same old, and I don't know what else you're going to do about it at this point.
Can I also argue that signing Adrian Peterson and cutting Chris Johnson does something else? It's off the field. It's in the locker room. It does two things to me. Number one, it sends a message. Guess what? Jobs are on the line, and there's no greater method of motivating players in pro sports than your job security. And then number two, I think it sort of provides a boost, a sense of morale. I think nobody knows better than the players that there is a fatal flaw in this team right now, and it's the lack of offensive line. It's undermining the entire offense. To me, it's a similar vibe to when the Cardinals didn't have a quarterback. And as soon as they got down 10 points in a game, no QB, no chance. And what you saw in Philadelphia, I think, in part, was a byproduct of that. And this move is the GM and the head coach sensing that.
I think it helps get people's attention. I don't know about the job security thing, because there's transactions all the time. People lose their jobs, maybe not as high profile as Chris Johnson, but he lost his job 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it's not like I don't think it snapped anybody out of anything. I don't put much stock in that, but I do think it maybe refocuses the team or just gives them a boost on offense, where if you went into this game status quo when you've been struggling to score points all year, maybe you do have that doubt in your mind, and Adrian Peterson probably gives you a lift this week because you feel like you can do more. But at the end of the day, in 3 or 4 weeks, we're also going to have an idea of what Adrian Peterson can do. And if he isn't demonstrably better than what they had, this short-term boost isn't going to matter much moving forward, because it's obviously going to dissipate after probably a week. And then you're kind of stuck at the same spot, maybe sans a sixth-round pick.
I don't know where you guys want to start on the 34-7 loss to the Eagles, but the start of the game is probably the most logical spot, where they put 3 touchdown passes on the scoreboard in the very first quarter. That's more touchdown passes than Carson Wentz had in a game in his NFL career, albeit brief. He's the first Eagles player to throw for 3 touchdowns in the first quarter. You know, and he had the GM Steve Keim on 98.7 FM with Doug and Wolf saying the following about how they should react to the loss in Philly.
Sometimes to be taken to the woodshed like this, if you're going to use it for any positive, is to maybe put that chip back on your shoulder and realize that you better get out there and start to fight.
Keim started the interview by saying, and I quote, "Quite frankly, I don't think we played this bad in all 3 phases since the NFC Championship game 2 years ago."
And that's probably fair. I mean, and they didn't play great last year, but I mean, although at one point during the game, somebody tweeted at me and said, "This is their worst performance in 10 years. And I'm like, okay, you obviously forgot the trip to Seattle in 2012, which actually, actually, Kerry Rhodes actually answered that tweet and said, yeah, that was really bad. So, and he was obviously on the field that day. So
there was the snow game and against New England. Heck, there was a Thanksgiving beatdown in Philly that same year, 2008.
That's true. So, I mean, I think it's all relative. They did not play well. I did not think it was one of their all-time worst games. I've unfortunately seen many of their all-time worst games, and he that wouldn't rank in there. But I will say this. As you come home against a Tampa team that has been very up and down, I don't know where they're going to be injury-wise. They were missing their two best linebackers last week. They're going to have extra time because they played on a Thursday night. So like the 49ers, they're going to have extra time to prepare for the Cardinals, and maybe that gets those linebackers back on the field. But they're not a great team. You know, they've had kicking problems. And you know, you're playing at home. You beat this team 40-7 last year. I know both teams are different. Clearly the offensive line is different for the Cardinals, but it's not like, you know, this team doesn't have a recollection of beating up the Buccaneers. So, I mean, hopefully going forward you can chalk up Philadelphia to more or less an aberration. I don't think the Cardinals are a great team, don't get me wrong, and I do think the Eagles are decent, but I think things got sideways awful fast.
What sticks with you most from that Philly loss, the Philly experience, you know, the whole aftermath in the locker room?
I think to me, I just coming into the season, I thought the defense was going to be really good, probably a top five defense in the NFL, looking at the talent, looking at the way those guys played in camp, and it's never shown itself through the first five games, and that's the big worry. I think even with David Johnson, I didn't think this offense was ever going to be great like it was 2 years ago. I thought it could have been good, but now, you know, you're looking at a subpar offense, and if your defense isn't going to be great, you're in pretty dire straits now. So this is a defense that has to get it back and has to show that it can play better than it has, because if you don't have that, as good as Adrian Peterson is, I mean, if he's great when he gets here, it's still not enough to make this team consistently win.
I mean, you look at the numbers. They've allowed 10 touchdown passes. That is 27th in the NFL. They're allowing 25 points a game, also 27th in the NFL. Third fewest takeaways, just 4. Third down conversions, teams have 32 through 5 games. That is third worst. You know, the only real splash play on defense, Justin Bethel, first quarter of game one against Detroit, the 82-yard pick 6.
And at that point, you thought, okay, this is what they did in camp. This is what they did in the preseason. Here they go. This defense is going to be great. And ever since then, even the interceptions haven't – they've done a little bit, but they've been trailing, or they weren't big returns. And they've had a couple picks, but nothing that stands out that much.
We know on special teams, you allowed the 76-yard punt return. There's a blocked field goal. So when Steve Keim says all three phases, you know, he's not kidding. Here's Bruce Arians of what he told the team on Monday.
Coach yourself on the tape. Don't allow a coach to coach you, because he already coached you last week. Coach yourself on the tape. Figure out why you made your mistakes so they don't happen this week.
Interesting. You think that's his way? And we talked to Frosty Rucker, you guys were there, about that a little bit. I think that's Bruce Arians putting the onus on each one of these guys to be a professional and truly self-assess and self-scout. And be honest with yourself and what you're seeing on film and take a closer look. And, you know, instead of perhaps pointing the finger all around, point thy finger at thyself. I guess that's my takeaway. What do you think he means by that, Darren?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot that goes into it. It's funny because the first thing that Bruce Arians said after the Eagles game was blame me. But obviously he's got some. He's had a couple of comments to basically say, you know, he's concerned about, you know, some of how the players are addressing some of this stuff.
Because he also mentioned extra time, free time between Friday and Sunday.
Well, especially on these two-day trips, you know, when we leave on a Friday afternoon, which essentially makes Saturday. I mean, they do walkthrough and stuff like that, but it gives you a lot more. I don't know if it gives you a lot more free time, to be honest, because on Fridays on home games they go home. I mean, I don't know why there would be a big difference there, but
true.
You know, again, some of it is I think they're trying to find whatever they can find. This is what happens, unfortunately. You know, Paul, you've been around, and I know, heck, I've been around many, many, many teams since I started covering this team, you know, 18, 19 years ago. When things start getting sideways and you're not good and you're actually maybe a little bit less than average, you start scrambling for answers. And I'm hoping they can find what the answers are. Ultimately, what usually happens is the answers aren't simple, like – if we just prepare a little bit more, or if the guys stop making these mistakes, or heck, even the coach. I mean, usually it's a little bit more, we don't have the players. And you don't want to say that, because ultimately, if you start saying we don't have the players, that means you can't fix it. And I know the Cardinals don't necessarily feel that way, but, you know, I thought when we went into this season that this was a 10-win team, but I also would say every single time, assuming they stay healthy, and they have not. And you can absorb some injuries, especially if they get spread around. But this team has gotten socked in the offensive line and at running back with their best player, and that just took whatever might have been in this offense out of it. And, you know, back to Kyle's point, I also thought that this defense was going to be very good. Obviously, losing Marcus Golden does not help them. But you start wondering a little bit about where their heads are, because, you know, like you were saying, in those days when the Cardinals didn't have a quarterback, it's tough to really stay super engaged and want to carry it. All the defenders are going to say, we know this is on us. We know this is on us, and we can do this, and we can do this. But human nature says, after a while, you're going to have some frustration.
Well, and the TV cameras caught Patrick Peterson after the 3rd and 19 that ended up a 72-yard touchdown where the Cardinals blitzed 6. BA said repeatedly, that was me. I told James Betcher to bring the house on that one. The blitz didn't get home, and it cost the Cardinals big time, and that's when Pete Twice erupted.
Yeah, well, I mean, good for him. When you're getting clobbered by that many points, if I was on the sideline, I'd be mad too. And the nature of the NFL, obviously cameras are everywhere, but I don't think it's a bad thing that he erupted like that. No. He wants to win badly. They were getting creamed, and his emotions boiled over, which Patrick is a guy that is rarely like that. I've never seen him blow
never.
Up like that.
I mean, the years on the sideline, he's never come close to being that irate.
So very easygoing, so happy-go-lucky in his nature. So, I mean, they probably need that, where they have to realize that they are, you know, at risk of falling out of the NFC West race if they keep playing like this. Because, you know, you can talk about being a game behind and, you know, one big win will get you back in it. But if you haven't shown it in through 5 games, like, why would people believe that this is coming when there's been no evidence that this team can compete? When you're looking at a Rams team that's looked really good, a Seahawks team that hasn't played that well but has the pedigree and the track record of doing it. So they might be hanging around for now, but I think once you look at the entire schedule, this team isn't going to be able to keep up unless there's big changes.
And judging by Patrick's tweet today, he is definitely one of those ones very excited that Adrian Peterson is.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But kind of reminds you of last year. You were sort of waiting for the team from 2015 to appear.
Yeah. See, and I think I was always a lot more optimistic last year, because this team, like Darren said, they blew out the Buccaneers. They blew out the Jets early. They had games where they turned it on and really played like they did the season before. And all the special teams weirdness, a lot of weird things last year. This year, it just seems like they're lining up and getting beat. So that's why I'm more pessimistic with this team unless something changes.
Well, here's Josh Morrow after the game. We had a chance to interview him in the visiting locker room. It was an excellent interview on his part, especially after a very difficult loss. And he basically said what BA said just 24 hours earlier as to how do you proceed going forward.
Comes down to 11 one-on-ones. And when you point a finger at someone, you got 3 coming back at you. So me personally, obviously, I would have liked to play better. I feel like everybody in this locker room would have liked to play better. But you can't put it on one person. You can't put it on one phase or one play, you know. And so we'll correct it and come back next week ready to roll.
The Shrine game, by the way, was the last time he snapped. He long snapped the Shrine game, just to let you know.
And Evan Bain was a sophomore in high school the last time he
really?
Snapped.
Yeah. I didn't know that. So, they had to split that in two after Aaron Brewer left early in the game with a busted wrist/hand. All I know is they were supporting his whole forearm in his hand. It looked pretty grisly.
Is this where we get to say Justin Drescher?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay,
break
Justin
it down.
Drescher,
break
new it down. Long snapper.
And what, 7 years in the league with the Saints?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So that does make me feel a lot better, because we've been through the inexperienced rookie long snapper not too long ago.
I don't see that happening again anytime soon.
Yeah. Here's what's amazing about Carson Palmer, among other things. If I do cite this, he has over 1,500 yards passing through 5 games. That's a new team record. A new team record for the first 5 games of a season. He's second only to Tom Brady. And right now the offense is struggling despite the quarterback and all the passing yards. Here's Steve Keim.
I don't know that Carson played his best two games starting the season, but the last three games, and he has taken a lot of shots. I thought he's played very good, certainly under those circumstances. But for a guy who's getting hit like he is, he still hangs in there and makes the throws and continues to amaze me with some of the ball placement and the resiliency that he shows after getting hit after hit.
Good to know Wolf's there.
Yeah. 50 times, Wolf, he's been hit in five games, and it would be 19 sacks. Well, that would be accurate, and both would be NFL highs right now. And can Carson expect to get any better? There were only two sacks against Philly, minus Fletcher Cox. Was it a step forward in any way when it came to pass protection? Or as you two looked at each other, should we save Calvisi or not? Should we save him or not?
I mean, it might say two sacks, but yeah. He was – maybe he wasn't running for his life, but he was shuffling for his life. And that was a big issue with the passes where, you know, he didn't have an interception in that game, but he was pretty lucky to not have one because J.J. Nelson played safety and John Brown played safety a couple times.
John Brown was an excellent cornerback in this game.
And Jerron Brown, I mean, the pass almost to Jerron Brown got tipped and almost picked off. So, I mean, he was moving around because the pressure was always getting there, and then he couldn't step and throw, and he wasn't in rhythm very much. So the sack numbers might be down, but there was no rhythm to that offense really in the passing game, and that's the big issue. Whether he gets sacked twice or five, six, seven times, it's a bigger deal to just not be in rhythm and not find those receivers after 2 or 3 seconds, and when you have to throw it in 1.5, that's a big problem.
I mean, 44 passes, 14 rush attempts. Beyond lopsided, I mean, not even close to being balanced, more than a 3-to-1 ratio. Is that the state of the Cardinals' offense, or was that more of a byproduct they got down 21-0, or yes?
Yes, I would say yes, because and Bruce Arians talked about it last week before the Eagles game. He was like, I got to call it more, and the dearly departed Chris Johnson even had said to me last week, and we talked about it on this airwaves, it was, you know, Chris Johnson said, you know, when it was mentioned to him that Bruce Arians wasn't calling the runs enough, he said, well, if, you know, I can understand that with the way we're producing with the run. You don't want to run it. And it's a combination of both. The funny thing is even at 21-0, I thought the Cardinals stuck with the run quite a bit, relatively speaking, in the Eagles game. It just went nowhere. And then eventually, when you start getting into the later parts of the game, you basically have to give it up. But I felt like they stuck with it. Let me put it this way. I think in previous years, if it had been 21-0 after the first quarter, it would have been Gandhi. And I felt like Bruce called quite a few runs the rest of the first half. And again, if that field goal doesn't get blocked, then it's good. And it's 21-10 at halftime. That's doable.
Here's my last stat, I promise. For those of you wondering, Calvisi, you're violating your hashtag no math. The Cardinals right now have the second most flags in the NFL. 45 penalties, wow, costing them 419 yards. It's sort of like the Tampa New England game on Thursday night when you watch that game, and Belichick's team had a dozen flags in that game, which they barely won, probably should not have won if not for the three missed Tampa field goals. That's one of the most disarming things with both the Patriots and now especially the Cardinals, all the penalty flags.
I feel like 95% of them are either offensive holding or
false start
or defensive penalties on third downs to give the other team a first down.
Yeah, that's true. No, you're right.
When your margin for error is so slim, I mean, these penalties are just killing the offense. If you can only run the ball for 2 yards on first down, that's not great, but second and 7, second and 8, at least you're okay. But then you run into second and 19 or first and 19, and obviously you're not running it then. So it's been a big issue, and it's just another thing for the offense to overcome, which – first and 10, just in a regular scenario, they're not doing great, and you add those in, and it almost, there's many times where they just threw that quick screen to Andre Ellington on 3rd and 16 and basically said, we're not gonna be able to throw it that far, so we're gonna have to punt, so let's just try to get 10 yards to help our punter.
I mean, to me, if you're looking for an area that says the Cardinals can correct things and turn this around, it would be that category, because to me that just says sloppy football. That says no attention to detail.
The penalties, you mean?
The just penalties. No, you just says, you know what, you guys just somehow aren't focused, and if you can correct that, then you might be able to change the direction of the way in which this season is proceeding.
I would like to know. I'd have to look. I don't know what the breakdown is, but with the 3:10 a.m. starts, I'd love to know how many of those penalties are in those three games compared to the other two. I'm not saying that it's going to show anything one way or the other, but I wonder a little bit about it. You know, whether we want to talk about the 10 a.m. starts or not. I mean, those have been three very poor games all the way around.
What do we need to know about this Tampa game? Anything? What do you guys – I mean, we all know what happened a year ago when the Cardinals turned things around and went back to 500 with an absolute jack-stomping to the Buccaneers 40-7.
Yeah, and as Jameis Winston is obviously a big name, he was a high draft pick, but in that New England game, I didn't think he played very well. I think he's a very inconsistent quarterback. And with this team, obviously you're 2-3. You're playing at home. You really, really need this game. I'd probably categorize it as a must win with where you're at this season. And you're going against a quarterback that can struggle, can throw errant passes. And we've talked about this defense needing to step up, and it really hasn't when it's needed. And if they can figure out a way to do it and show some stuff that we thought we would see, they can win this game. But, you know, we've been talking about that for a few weeks, and it hasn't happened yet. So it's a really big spot for the defense, I think.
They got picks on Winston last year. Patrick got one. Marcus Cooper got a couple. And I think
four of them
big.
Total.
But I will say that it's going to be – I think – considering they're coming off a 34-7 loss, the addition of Adrian Peterson, I think, guarantees that you're going to have a raucous crowd. You won't have a lot of Buccaneers fans because they're not going to travel. So I think that helps in terms of what the crowd's going to be like. And I think everybody's going to be jacked up to see Adrian Peterson. Now, again, if he gets his first two or three carries and he gets 1 and 2 and minus 1 yard, it'll dissipate quickly, especially if they end up going 3 and out a couple times. But at least out the outset, they're going to have a lot of momentum. They're going to have the crowd behind them, and hopefully they can play into that.
And if they can get, once again, can get DJ Humphreys and Alex Boone back, that's what they do best, run block. Those two, I mean, DJ Humphreys will come off the ball, and he will fight you. We still don't know how he is in terms of pass protection as a left tackle. He only has 3 starts in his NFL career. But we did see last year, man, he can come off the ball and run block.
And that would be nice just to have those guys back, just to see what this offense can be full strength for now, where you know David Johnson is going to be out for a couple months. If you can get those guys back, like, do they have another level? Or are they going to struggle full strength? Or once you get the O-line a little bit figured out, you get Adrian Peterson involved, maybe they can take a step forward. And that's what I want to see is – is this it for the offense? Are they going to struggle all year, or are they going to be able to kind of finally put some points on the board?
Okay, so producer extraordinaire Jim Omohundro looks up the 10 a.m. penalties. How many total penalties do they have now?
Wait a minute. 45 penalties total on the year.
So this isn't going to help much, because in the three 10 a.m. games, it was 6 in Detroit, 6 in Indianapolis, and 7 in Philly. So that's only 19. So they've had half in their 2 home games. So, yeah, forget about all that crap.
Okay, man. You know what? We're going to leave it right there. I mean, Darren Downer, really? Did you have to do that on the podcast here? You know what?
Well, crinkling up paper, that's your shtick, and I stole it.
Only
and you don't like it?
53 guys have to redeem themselves on Sunday. There's one guy in the press box, and we won't name names, but it'll come up next week on Cardinals Underground.
Well, the Jolly Roger pulled through and made it to the land. We disembarked, went into town with a vengeance in our hand. The children cried, the women sighed, the men would turn their heads. So with a smile, we chanted loud, and this is what we said. Whoa!